The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. On today's program, we will explore the concepts behind prevention, intervention, and treatment, as well as recovery options and innovations. Our program is a forum of factual research, personal experiences, and knowledgeable opinions. Now, here is your host, Dr. Joe Terhar.
Welcome, welcome. It's just a joy to have you all with me today. Welcome to the Voice America Network and the Health and Wellness Channel. I have been very fortunate and really blessed to be able to work in addiction prevention, intervention, and treatment since 1978, having many experiences and learning from many people along the way. I'm here to share with you what I have learned from you and your experience, and we together share in overcoming addiction with the hope of prevention, intervention, and treatment. Do not forget to like us on Facebook. And of course, as always, our call-in line is open at 866-472-5792. And of course, we usually take calls the second half of the show, so have a little patience there. We love to hear from our special guest first. Also, don't forget to email us at drjoeradio@gmail.com. So, since the 1930s, the mid-1930s, things changed in the world of addiction. And many of you know exactly what I'm referring to. In the mid-1930s, a group of people gathered repeatedly to find that by supporting each other in adhering to a common set of values and principles and interacting with each other around these principles, they could survive addiction only with complete abstinence. Well, this was the start of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's put that into the context of human history. It was the first effort in human history effective in arresting the fatal process of addiction. The 1930s, it was the first time mankind had ever come across anything that actually worked. Before then, people who had an addiction died, or ended up incarcerated or disabled until one of those other outcomes. Hopefully there were many people who discovered abstinence on their own, but they were isolated. They were not in a community of support. Last week, remember, we had a wonderful visit with Cynthia Moreno-Tui, the executive director of NADAC, the world's largest professional organization of addiction counselors and professionals. And she shared with us essential principles of addiction recovery. And you can hear that these in part grew out of that 12-step Alcoholics Anonymous movement. Some of those principles she spoke about are that recovery support has to be person-centered. You can't just address all addicts the same as you address all addicts. Yes, there are principles common to all, but it has to be person-centered because we are each unique individuals. Number two, that there are many pathways. Again, you cannot regiment 100 people with addiction down the same pathway and expect them to survive. Number three, that the efforts have to be culturally based and responsive. You know, there are different groups of people who have evolved their own values, their own rituals, their own worldview. And we cannot expect all people to morph into the culture I grew up in, for example, which is middle-class Caucasian American. We have to respect that people come from different cultural and ethnic backgrounds. Number four, that treatment efforts have to be holistic. We have to address the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. Of course, those of you in 12-step, you know that those are just classic fundamentals. Next, we have to approach addiction recovery efforts with respect. We cannot look down upon people. And another very, very critical one that Cynthia talked about was we have to help people generate peer support. You cannot do it alone. We can't. Human history has proven that up until mid-1930s. So our special guest today is Toni Lodge, and she is an expert in addiction recovery, in particular, that is empowered with Native American values. Toni Lodge is the chief executive officer of the Native Project Incorporated, which is a large multi-service addiction treatment and community health center in Spokane, Washington. She's dedicated most of her adult life to serving those who are suffering from addiction and poor health. Most of her career has been with the Native Project, providing addiction recovery to adolescents and their families, and now, in more recent years, also to adults in a metropolitan area that serves the fourth largest urban Indian concentration in the United States. And we'll hear from her. She serves people of all ethnic, races, backgrounds, etc., but they have a special emphasis for the Native community and Native people. Her agencies involve much more than what we are learning about during the show. She provides so much, and I'm eager for her to speak more about that. Welcome, Toni. How are you this morning?
Very well, thank you.
Great. Well, just would you start off by telling us a little bit about the Native Project, and let's start with the addiction treatment part of it, because that's what most of our listeners have tuned into, and then we'll broaden it from there. Tell us about the Native Project.
Well, the Native Project is a nonprofit that is a legal urban Indian organization. We are funded by the Urban Indian Health branch of the Indian Health Services. And we offer medical, dental, pharmacy, and we've co-located our substance abuse treatment efforts for adolescents and our mental health efforts for adolescents and adults. And like you said, we've recently begun work with the University of Washington to do research on what are best practices in substance abuse interventions for Native American adults, and really trying to do a large prevention effort. It's, I feel like we can't really do, end of care, end of disease, end of life treatment and interventions if we don't put as much effort into prevention. So a lot of our programs are geared for youth, and they're preventative in nature for substance abuse, for depression, for suicide, for gang involvement, for obesity, all the things that become barriers for people living long and healthy lives.
Fantastic. I want to zero in on one particular thing that you said. I want to put this into context. There are about 10,000 drug and alcohol treatment centers in the United States. I want our listeners to picture all the counselors that are sitting in their offices in these 10,000 treatment centers across the states. Well, let's recognize that in a sense, he and she can do kind of whatever they want in terms of drug treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, You go to school, you get your education to be a chemical dependency counselor. And so if someone wants to invent a new kind of therapy, well, that there's nothing really stopping that counselor from doing that in his or her office with his or her clients. And it really doesn't matter that it works if the counselor feels good about doing it. Well, now, wait a minute. I've got a problem with that because this is a fatal process. So a word, a term that you used, Tony, you talked about best practices. I want you to speak about that a little bit because here we have 10,000 treatment centers. Why is it so important that we have centers like the Native Project who are aware of best practices and who utilize best practices to ensure quality? Talk to us about that.
You know, I'm one of the late converts to the concept of best practices. Actually, a grant I wrote one time, they said, you know, please describe your evidence-based and best practices that you use in the Native community or in your community for treatment. And I said, well, you know, we managed to live here in this country on this land for 30,000 years without using alcohol. So maybe that was a best practice.
Wow, yeah. Oh, excellent point. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, best practices, I think, evolve organically in many communities. It's what we've always known intuitively or spiritually or culturally. It's what we can observe, you know, the seasons, the stars, how people do best. You know, and I do appreciate the research efforts that are emerging, you know, in SAMHSA and NIDA and the universities across this country. But I think sometimes we forget about the knowing that people, that elders and children have. Children have as much knowing as adults when you talk to them, which is why I really love our prevention programs. They know what's scary. They know what feels good. They can tell you. It's the old adage, you know, I worked in treatment a year less than you have since 1979. And the old adage is, if you want to know who's the addict in the family, ask the children. I think it's so true.
Yeah, very true.
But we neglect that information when we're planning for our communities. So I've really learned over the years to respect and honor and to take in those best practices. What I kind of chafe sometimes about them being imposed on us, mm-hmm. if they have not been tested and truly investigated in various communities. But I just think we, you know, it's common sense. It's like raising a family. Raising a community is like raising a family. You know, it's practice. It's reading a book. It's talking to your parents and grandparents and other elders. It's putting all of that information together. One thing I have learned over the years about counselors is that you don't put them in offices. And that's an emerging best practice in the medical community, too. We find that we make less mistakes when the professionals are seated near each other. It gives them, and that's my medical doctors in the clinic, and that's the counselors in the behavioral health programs. If you have a chance to give feedback, test, talk and share how we should deal or serve or plan with these patients, you just get better outcomes.
Wow.
So a lot of what we've done is taken down walls. And that is, you know, we talked really briefly about the emergence of medical home models and yes. patient-centered care.
Hang on. Let's pick this
okay.
up right after the break. We've got to take
okay.
a break. I love that. I love that, the whole office issue. We'll be right back after a couple messages from our sponsors to continue our conversation with Tony Lodge.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry and more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15-minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the Video Products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning Dr. Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved ones' lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Welcome back. Well, one of the things that I want to mention is, again, you've all heard this before. Let's take a moment and think about those people out there who are struggling with chronic pain. You know the trap. You've heard about it before. They cannot quit the pain medication because they've got so much pain. But then with the pain that is there, they're really not living either. That trap of being on pain medications and yet becoming debilitated and less active and less happy. Well, you've heard me speak before about the way out. Contact Las Vegas Recovery Centers. Call Dr. Mel Pohl, truly a nationally recognized and award-winning expert on pain and pain management and addiction recovery. So give them a call. Help your loved one get into Las Vegas recovery. So today we're visiting with Tony Lodge, Executive Director of the Native Project, a multi-service treatment agency. And we were talking about the counselor sitting in one's own office and how Tony talked about breaking down walls and working collaboratively across service areas. So, Tony, tell us more about that.
Well, when all of this healthcare reform movement started, you know, we were required to do the intensive training and learning about how you do integrated patient care, patient-centered care, medical home models. And one thing was really clear to me as we went through that, it was like a 2.5-year intensive training process. One thing was really clear to me, they recommended pods. And it just made more sense to me as we talk about multidisciplinary teams, as we talk about co-occurring disorder, you know, our mental health people and our substance abuse people need to be physically located closer to each other. And so we changed the construct of some of our clinic. We actually took down walls and moved more people in pods, is what they called a medical home model. I think it really leads itself to an adult learning community. People from medical, mental health, substance abuse, prevention learn from each other when they're seated close to each other. They talk about patients from a more multi-dimensional term. Every part of the building has huddles in the morning where they staff patients before they're seen. Substance abuse, mental health, and medical all huddle the patients in the morning. Things that actually substance abuse has done for many years, other disciplines are recognizing that was probably a best practice and are adopting. Like, medical never used to staff patients. Mm-hmm. They would just have their schedule full. They'd walk in the exam room, they'd see the patient, patient would leave. Now medical actually is kind of a treatment model, staffing those patients every single day, saying, what is the best thing that we can do for this patient today? And I love it. I love watching the shift on how people are describing the patient. It's not so much of a problem, but it's more of a problem-solving model. And I really think we owe that to the treatment community for being, you know, that's been our model for years and years and years. So we owe them that. I also think that as you talked about what things do people learn, Mike's, and I'll change subject here a little bit, you know, sure. My experience is I'm a Turtle Mountain Chippewa. I'm a member of one tribe. We serve people from over 220 tribes at this facility.
Wow.
We serve African Americans, Asian Pacific Islanders, Hispanic people, Caucasian people. You know, nobody is the cultural expert. I'm only a cultural expert on my own life. I'm not a cultural expert on all natives. So I'm not speaking for all natives. I'm just kind of relaying my my experience that I've had doing this work. But I think one of the big barriers, like you said, imagine that counselor in the room. I think when counselors come in, a lot of times what they don't know is more prevalent than what they know, and especially the parts that they don't know, especially about cultural interaction. So I think having this learning community for adults, break down walls, co-locate people, seat them together, staff, everything is staffed, everything is a multidisciplinary team, I think it kind of undoes, not to be controversial, but our educational system is still an extension of colonization that we're trying to make people this one way. We need to unlearn that colonization, especially people who have been unempowered, like the Native community. And our unconscious racism and our unconscious biases, it's always still fascinating to me how much bias there is about substance abuse and people who are substance abusers and addicts. It just blows my mind. I'm like, you know, so I think co-locating people chips away at that biases, and people get confronted on, hey, that's not what's the norm in the Black community. That's not what's the norm in the Indian community, which I hear a lot of new graduates say. And I'm like, you know, this is really, like you said, this is the end game for these people is death. And so you better pay attention and get whatever skills you can to make sure we save lives and help people be productive. One of the best practices I think that transcends culture is motivational interviewing. And every single person in this building, from maintenance to me, have taken motivational interviewing over and over and over. Mm-hmm. I do think it is the one of the main best practices that transcends culture.
Right. And I want to highlight that point in that when you and I started in this profession, there was a more common trend, and I still hear remnants of it here and there, about addiction treatment being confrontational and having people rotate through a hot seat in group therapy. And I want all of our listeners to understand that, thank goodness, is extremely rare. And what Tony's talking about is motivational interviewing or motivational enhancement therapy, either term. And this is the antithesis of that old, old, outdated confrontational, because what she's talking about is a process that is supportive, it gives compassion, and it motivates the person to move forward. And it is a research-based best practice. So we know it actually works. So that's fantastic to hear that your entire staff is well educated in that. Yeah.
Well, that's not to say that kids don't get confronted at times, Dr. Joe. I'm just kidding. I always tell people, I said, imagine the warriors that are doing adolescent treatment. I mean, these are kids, you know, kids get into treatment because they've pissed somebody off. You know, they're not your friendliest, although they are. I love adolescents. you know, they're hungry when they get here after school. They're irritable. They may be on the way up or on the way down in their drug and alcohol use. I mean, as a parent, I could hardly stand my teenagers some days. Imagine having two large groups of them every day in intensive outpatient. So I do really have to give a shout out to the people. And then to the people that do adolescent or youth treatment. And then I have people saying, oh, I would never do adult treatment. And then the people who do adolescent treatment and just go, we love it. We love working with this group of people. But yeah, they do get confronted. But you're right. Not like old hot seat days. Not like that confrontational therapy. But you know, there is still that boundaries about good behavior. Again, just like we're a community, we're whatever you need, maybe you missed in your family or your school, you know, we'll add those skills in now that you're more conscious. Hopefully you'll be able to learn it. I think another thing that is very common that has not been brought to the surface, both in medical, mental health, and substance abuse treatment, is that dimension of untreated trauma. Mm-hmm. And especially in the Native community and the African American community, Hispanic, maybe other historically, what would you call oppressed community?
Yeah, oppressed. You betcha. Yeah. Yeah, systematically oppressed.
Yes, and methodically and planned. You know, we have historical trauma, we have personal trauma, and I think if I could turn back the clock. That, which I can't, but I wish in the last 30 years we would have talked more about it and had more specific training on treating trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's actually what each of these counselors do when those kids walk in the door every day or the many of the adult patients. And it's something that I hope we pay more attention to. And develop more treatment modalities or ways to help people through it. Because, I mean, every day we see it. And now we know that it's related to things like diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's related to things like cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Have untreated trauma as a child or a teenager.
Yeah. I think your point about the transgenerational and systemic oppression is very, very important, and how for many people then that interacts additionally with trauma. Another point I think is just wonderful that you made is the structures of society and how they were so conformity oriented. You know, in my educational training, I was taught about how seriously our school system, as it is today, was really based in the Industrial Revolution, when Henry Ford helped everyone value regimentation and people doing the same piece of work over and over again. And that's why we've had historically classrooms with straight rows of chairs, with their dispensed information. They've got to regurgitate the information. And many classrooms today are moving to a collaborative learning model, which we find from research really meets individuals' needs much better rather than trying to regiment everyone through. And again, this is what you're talking about in terms of treatment, in terms of helping families in their communities, helping individuals in their families and in their communities to grow and have that support for growing. Another thing that you talked about is, you know, the cultural views, the viewpoints of people, whether ethnic or even microculture. And I like to point out of how, yes, that is so important. And that's a great part of what treatment is about, is helping people see and experience a new value system around abstinence and respect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, in fact, we just had this conversation yesterday with the staff. I said, you know, for kids these days that, you know, like you said, school doesn't work for most of them. They're so electronically tuned. Their brains are wired differently. Even the people, staff I have in their 20s, you know, they've lived this electronic lifestyle all their life. Native people, African-American people, not just, you know, middle-class white kids, all kids learn this way now. And I said, you know, the old adage for treatment is, and educating Native kids is that you have to use sight, sound, and color. Lectures do not work. I hate lectures, and I hate watching my staff do a really boring lecture. So, you know, then we change that up. I said, you know, everybody has different learning, so you have to say it, you have to see it, and you have to touch it.
Yes, yes.
And that, and so you have to design treatment to see, say, and touch it. Sight, sound, color. But we were talking yesterday about if we want to be effective with this group of adolescents that's called drug treatment and even mental health therapy, we have to layer in the element of electronic whatever. We have to use more computers. We have to use more a visual of what, you know, what they're used to seeing. And I see it more and more, the more that we add that into our prevention and treatment programs, the more responsive the kids get, because that's how they're wired to learn.
Right, absolutely. It's a change in our culture,
mm-hmm.
a change in our culture. We're going to move on to some other points as soon as we get back from the break. Fantastic. Our special guest today is Tony Lodge of the Native Project, and we'll learn much more right after the break. Thank you.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry, and more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15-minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the video products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning doctor Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved ones' lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction. This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I've got two quick mentions here before we return to our very special guest. Number one is we're putting together a couple of shows on the treating the impaired healthcare professional, doctors, nurses, physical therapists who've developed their own addiction. And so we're auditioning. We're interviewing treatment centers across the entire United States that have this expertise, because it's something that is more common than many people imagine. And people who are healthcare professionals, they have an extra duty in their jobs, and that duty can become a challenge. So if you have experience in this area, let us know. We'd like to get input on the treatment that is being provided across the United States. We're looking to select a treatment center that has fantastic expertise in this area. So please send us some referrals, treatment centers that would like to be featured on our show nationwide. Number two, let me tell you a quick story. I was doing group therapy the other night. We had three gentlemen in a group of about 10-12 people, and they began the group therapy. I asked them, you know, tell me, are you an addict? Reflect on that. And of the 10 or 12 people in the group, three gentlemen said, no, they just abuse it. They just abuse their drug. I said, great. So during the course of the group, after we were all checked in, I shared with them from research, how do we truly delineate abuse from an addiction? And you can look at this in terms of the difference between a very bad sunburn versus skin cancer. How do you tell the difference? How do professionals tell the difference? I shared this information with these gentlemen and the whole group about it. Here's how you really tell the difference between addiction and abuse. And you know that at the end of that group, not only did all three of them acknowledge, I really understand now, I really do have an addiction. But one gentleman, he said, I'm really angry with you, Dr. Joe. And I said, let me have it. Share what's going on. He said, no, I had ignored it. I had denied it for a long time. I'm really angry with you now because I really do understand now. I really have the addiction. And that's a natural reaction. Not that he's angry at the situation he's in. So those of you in treatment, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, you can have that powerful presentation and group process. Why? How? Well, my video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit. It takes you through that 10-minute process of helping people understand really from research, what is it that delineates abuse from addiction? Dial in on your search engine, silvertopvideo.com. You get that and much more about the brain neurobiology that you can take into your individual counseling session, because it plays on any machine, and you can help your clients really understand. So we're back with our very special guest, Tony Lodge, and we're talking about treatment and changes in treatment over the decades, and how we cannot provide treatment in one size fits all, how we have to be respectful of people's individual viewpoints, their cultural background. We have to be person-centered. We have to support them in increasing their social support network. And so let me hand that back to you, Tony. Where would you like to take us next in this wonderful conversation?
Well, a couple things come to mind. One of them is, you know, we've all, again, in that organic model of growing our own best practices and growing our own wellness in our communities, I think Native people, no matter if you're Southwest, Plains, Salish, Plateau, we always knew that it was a four-step process, that it was a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual process. We knew that a long time ago before it became in the norm here, that it is a multidimensional process. But it still caused us some problems in developing programs, because there was so many tribes, over 200 tribes. Whose tribe do you use their spirituality in your program? So finally, we just decided to keep it simple. You know, we're going to do spirituality by the numbers. You know, four directions, 10 commandments, 12 steps. We don't care what you use, as long as you work some kind of a spiritual program. And it's the same with doing this new healthcare reform about how we integrate services is very, very similar. Like you said, there's no one right way to do it. As we're moving towards this medical home model where the medical really is going to be prescriptive and asking us how to serve this patient where you know we've been used to actually practicing pretty autonomously, you know, now we're going to have to maybe defer to the physical part of that human in a different way than we've been able to do in treatment before. Because that's not been our scope of practice. I mean, CDPs don't do medical diagnosis, but it's such an important part of addiction, like you just said. You know, where are they at on that addiction scale? Where are they at on that depression scale or that the mental health scale? And we know now, when you're especially adults, that everything is related to everything. It is a circle. And you really can't stop that circle at some point and start it again, that it just goes... It is so interconnected that it's been a shift. Like they say, the pyramid goes upside down. So we're learning to defer more to our partners and not be so isolated in our substance abuse world. And I think that's good. That's been really kind of fun because honestly, we know way more about humans than medical or mental health ever thought we did. I mean, chemical dependency professionals deal with people at their most basic base level. And the medical staff are always amazed about what the CDPs know because we've had to actually learn a lot about the physical health of our patients because chemical dependency is such a physical disease.
I want to highlight that in two ways. One of the ways is in moving towards complementing you and having a health center co-located with your treatment center. When I used to teach addiction studies, I would challenge my students to say, if this is truly a disease of body, mind, emotion, and spirit, what is your depth and your breadth of background in order that you can assess who has an addiction based on their body, mind, emotion, and spirit? How many of you are experts in spirituality? Of course, none of them raised their hand. How many of you are experts in mental health? Well, none of them raised their hand. How many of you are experts in emotionality? None of them raised their hand. I said, okay, let's hit the last one. How many of you are experts in the body? None of them raised their hand. We have chemical dependency counselors who are educated to treat a disease of body, mind, emotion, and spirit, and they really don't have expertise in any of those areas. Now, it's good that we provide them expertise in addiction, but this, for me, highlighted so well the imperative that chemical dependency counselors work in a setting where they work as a team. And you have that with the Native Project. You have physicians there on site. You have nursing staff. You have social workers. And you have chemical dependency counselors. And as you said, you've taken down the walls and you are working as a team. What an ideal setting to practice chemical dependency recovery counseling.
Well, and again, that's what the ACA, that's what healthcare reform says. And I think the benefit for chemical dependency counselors and mental health therapists, or behaviorists as they call it in the Act, I think their professional skills are going to be elevated in this medical reform arena. I think as you have these patient-centered care teams, that the presence of chemical dependency professionals and mental health professionals are imperative. So hopefully they're going to get paid better because that's always been a problem in the chemical dependency field. You know, I don't think that we pay them enough. Our contracts don't allow that. The reimbursements don't allow that. But I think that the medical staff, dental, pharmacy, everyone's going to see the value, and especially our patients are going to see the value of having those people on their care teams or on their expert teams that the patient can call on for help. And so I think as we move forward in this healthcare reform arena, tearing down the walls, But it's mostly going to benefit our patients.
Yes.
And it's good, and I think it'll benefit the profession too, because I always say of all the professions in this building, and again, I supervise people from maintenance to physicians, the only job I would ever want, and I am a CDP, I've kept my license all these years, would be to work in chemical dependency, because I think it changes lives better and faster than almost any other profession. You know, it gets people healthier, faster, and it restores their families and their culture faster than almost any other profession that you can do. You know, and I love the work. You've known me a long time, Dr. Joe. I am an advocate for recovery.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
I think it, I find it fascinating now that the mental health community is moving towards this recovery-oriented model. It's like, yes, people can get well. They may not be the picture that you want, but people can get well, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And isn't that our journey on this planet? Isn't that what we're supposed to do, help each other get there?
So. Yeah. Yep. I want to mention one little item here in this whole, especially with medical staff working with chemical dependency staff, because we've got a number of physicians who tune in and ARNPs and other nurse practitioners and whatnot who tune into the show. And this is something I've only mentioned once. I really want to highlight, and that is that one tool to just a tool that really helps improve the working relationship between chemical dependency counselors and prescribers is a liver test called a CDT, carbohydrate deficient transferrin. Now, in my 35-year career, I run across way too many prescribers and physicians who are not familiar with this. And it is the gold standard in scientifically detecting abuse of the liver, specifically from alcohol, from the drinking alcohol, ethanol. So for physicians there, please look that up in your resources, carbohydrate deficient transferrin, because what it does, when the physicians are aware of that, it gives the confirmatory indicators, medical indicators, that a person's liver is being abused by alcohol, and it helps them then motivate the person to sit down with that chemical dependency counselor. And chemical dependency counselors, you're doing an assessment, and you have some soft indicators of a person having a problem, but you'd really like to have a physician or a healthcare professional look inside and at the liver and see, is the liver being damaged? That test is the gold standard. So again, just an example of one of the many, many ways that we can continue to improve the conversation and the collaborative efforts between healthcare professionals and chemical dependency counselors, to say nothing of social workers and everyone else that we really want as a part of the holistic team.
Well, and that's one of the big shifts that we see in our treatment center and clinic, is in the patient-centered care, exactly what you just said. Say the physician did order that test and the test came back. You know, before, the patient would go in the lobby, go see in the exam room. You needed to see the nutritionist. You go to their office. You need to see the counselor, go to their office. Now all those people go to the exam room. They go to the patient. And so the patient always gets the idea that they are the most important person in the room, because all these professionals are coming to them to have these conversations about their health. And I love it, and our patients love it. They're the ones the most transformed by healthcare reform. And I think it's only going to get better and better for recovery from substance abuse, you know, lifting of depression and treatment of these really very painful medical issues that are related to those other things.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about I think we may be jumping into a break here.
Oh, okay.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Jolene. I'm a certified chemical dependency counselor, and I've worked with adolescents, adults, and families. I have personally seen how Dr. Joe explains the brain chemistry of drug use to users and their families. As the drug user and the family gains the information presented, the transformation begins, and it is actually visible. The connection is made between abstinence and recovery. In Dr. Joe's video, Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit, you get the full 2 hours of brain chemistry, and more importantly, the menu-driven 10 to 15-minute review of each drug. This video is ideal for individual and family counseling, family intervention preparation, and college classes.
Order your copy of Why People Use Drugs and How to Help Them Quit at www.silvertopvideo.com and click the Video Products button.
Are you or someone you love suffering from chronic pain? Are you tired of pain medications? Is there anxiety, stress, depression, anger, and fatigue due to chronic pain? We have a solution which will reclaim your life. Las Vegas Recovery Center offers an evidence-based, holistic inpatient program led by award-winning doctor Mel Pohl. Your life and your loved ones' lives will be restored, and the chain of chronic pain, pills, and medications will be broken. Call 888-538-3729 to get back your life.
This is Overcoming Addiction, Hope with Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment with Dr. Joe Terhar. To reach Dr. Joe or his guest today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send us an email to drjoeradio@gmail.com. Now, back to Overcoming Addiction.
Thank you and welcome back. We're visiting with Tony Lodge, Executive Director of the Native Project, a multi-service health and addiction center. And we're having just a wonderful conversation with her. Well, Tony, we've only got about 4 or 5 minutes left. What is your next most important point that you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, I would just like to say that you know, we are not unique as a clinic. I think most Indian health clinics in this nation have been forced to be a multidisciplinary service center that we've really for many 20, 30 years, 40 years have been doing integrated care. And, you know, I think we're the champions because we've been doing it for so long. And I just want to give a message. So often we're invisible on media and in research, but I want to give a comment that Native people, half of Native people do not drink alcohol or use drugs. We are one of the most truly abstinent populations in the United States. But we get a pretty bad rap from when we do have media exposure. That there's, you know, drunk Indian is not one word. But we're really invested in recovery and we're really invested in wellness. Mm-hmm. We're a community that's really trying to preserve ourselves from the genocide and the oppression, and moving into the 21st century. I want my grandchildren to be Indians in 100 years. So, I mean, we're doing some heavy lifting in this community to make sure that happens.
Right. And let me just say that that leadership gets to then transcend all cultural and ethnic lines and groups.
Right.
Because we all need that. We all need to learn from each other as a nation in overcoming addiction. As I said specifically in the show with Cynthia last show, it takes a village to raise a child, but it takes an entire nation to overcome addiction, because it is so genetically ingrained, culturally ingrained, relationally ingrained, familially ingrained, and we have to be very forward in how we do that. And let's remember where we started off this show, talking about how these efforts have to be person-centered, and that's certainly true at the Native Project, that there are many pathways, again, imbued at the Native Project. They have to be culturally based and responsive. Again, very true at the Native Project. Holistic, really looking at the physical, emotional, spiritual, and I forget you broke that up just a little bit differently, but
physical, emotional, and spiritual.
Yes, and done with respect, and then generating peer support, especially. Well, I was going to say especially adolescents, but really not. Especially everyone, mm-hmm. everyone endeavoring in addiction recovery. So it has been fantastic having you on the show today, Tony. And I love how you talked about how you get to work in the same area with the physicians and healthcare experts. I've always had that as a very critical part of my work in addiction recovery, working with the whole family and working with physicians. But I don't have a staff of physicians in the same building like you do. And it's just what a fantastic opportunity and arena that you have to work in. It has been a pleasure to have you on the show, and thanks very much for all of the information and the additional perspectives that you have provided to us. What's the last thing you'd like to share?
Well, I think you said it, and I thank you for inviting me, is that, you know, we're all on this journey, and if, you know, Native doesn't, people say, why does Native just serve Natives? I was like, we don't. The YWCA doesn't just serve young Christian women anymore. Native right. doesn't just serve Natives anymore. We're mm-hmm. all in this together, and it's a journey to wellness. And so thank you for getting the word out in any little way we can to make sure that we're all on this path together.
Excellent. My final thanks to Scott Duffy, executive producer with Voice America, and Jen Schwartz, her incredible assistance in putting together the show. We'll see you all in the next episode.
Bye.
Thank you again for listening to Overcoming Addiction. Please join Dr. Joe again next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a good week.